they've all saw gone to large factory farms, so to speak, and same way with raising hogs. You know, they talk about these hog farms that have 500 to 1,000 hogs on them and so forth, but the dairy farms today, you know, if you don't milk 100 cows, it's very difficult to make a go of it.
When were you born?
I was born April 8th, 1924.
And that was in East Springfield?
In East Springfield, yes, on Route 20.
What were your parents' names?
Harold was my father's name, and Gladys was my mother's name.
Did you have any siblings?
Yes, I have two sisters, both older, Dorothy and Janet, who both have deceased.
How large was the farm you lived on growing up?
It was about 100 acres, and as I say, we had about 25 to 30 milk cows, and when I was a kid, until I was, I guess, about 12 years old, my father made butter, cottage cheese, and of course with the chickens, he had a room in Fort Plain where twice a week he sold butter and eggs and cottage cheese and so forth to a room he had in Fort Plain.
What was it like growing up on the farm?
Well, it was fun. Even though when you're on a farm, there's always a lot of hard work. I never minded the work. I don't think I ever complained about it much. But there was always something to do. You had your chores to do. You also had time for a little fun. Although by today's standard, you didn't travel and you didn't have a lot of the things that we expect today.
What chores did you have to do?
Well, when I was really young, I used to help feed the chickens and gather the eggs, feed the hogs, feed the calves. If you had calves you were raising, feed them. Probably didn't start milking much until I was 10, 11 years old. And of course, back then, when I was real young, everybody milked by hand. And we didn't get milking machines on our farm until I was probably 12 or 14 or something like that. So we were expected to milk 3 or 4 cows and do chores that, you know, needed to be done.
Now, you said you got milking machines when you were 12 or 14?
Yeah.
So did that mean you didn't have to milk anymore? Or did you still have to milk cows?
Had to milk, but you ran the milking machines and, or helped run it, helped do it. It seems like any time that I was ever on the farm after that, I always had to milk.
So it didn't cut out all the work?
No. It made it a lot easier, of course, with the milking machines. But it did, you still had to be there and do it.
What did you do for fun growing up?
Well, as I say, as a family, we played a lot of cards, played a lot of games, played poker. in the wintertime, we'd go ice skating. And of course, the school became a center of your universe, so to speak, as you're growing up. And you know, your people that you've met in school and played with, or later on played sports with, were a big part of, you know, of growing up.
Did you play a lot of sports?
That's an interesting question. Well, yes, I played a lot of sports. However, I had a problem. When I was 8 years old, I had what at that time they called Bright's disease, which today they give you antibiotics and it's all over with, where I had to go on a special diet for 3-4 months or something like that. But it left me with an enlarged heart, and my physician, who was also, of course, the school doctor, wouldn't let me play any sports when I was a freshman and sophomore in high school. When I became a junior, I played football and baseball, but he wouldn't let me play basketball. And we had some pretty good teams. In fact, my senior year in high school, we were champions of the league and had a great baseball team.
Did you want to play basketball in high school?
Yes, of course.
Why did your doctor not let you play?
Was such that he didn't think that it was, you know, that I was should do it.
But you were still able to do the other sports anyway.
Yeah, I was. And of course, ended up during when the war, World War II started, I ended up in 4F because of my heart, which that didn't mean I couldn't work or anything, but the doctors didn't think that I would be able to stand the stress and whatever of combat and so forth. Yeah.
So that's how you weren't drafted, or?
Yeah. I was 4F for a couple of years, and then I was put into a agricultural exemption thing, which bothered me a little at the time, but probably was for the best.
Now I'm going to backtrack a little bit. In high school, you were involved in the Boy Scouts?
Yes. We had a teacher by the name of Earl Spooner who came. He taught 7th and 8th grade. And he started the Boy Scout troop probably around 1935 or 36. And I became very active and loved the Boy Scouts. We had, it was Troop 47, and we had a really good troop, mainly because of his leadership. I became the first Eagle Scout that the troop had.
What did you have to do to earn that distinction?
Well, you have to have so many merit badges. I can't remember now how many it was. Quite a few. And that, and you had to have some kind of a project, not quite as formal, I think, as it is today, but anyway, some kind of a community project.
Do you remember what your project was?
No, I don't. But I stayed active in the Boy Scouts, even after I graduated from school, and then eventually became a scoutmaster for a few years, until I sold the farm and had to travel some in my work. It wasn't possible, of course. So.
Now, as a Boy Scout, you went to the National Jamboree. Do you remember anything about that?
Yes, there's a, you know, that's a long time ago, but I remember it, there were, I think there were five boys that went. Earl Spooner drove. I think somebody in town donated a station wagon at that time. And we went to the Jamboree in Washington, D.C. And that was quite an experience for a little country boy, you know. There were thousands and thousands of Boy Scouts from all over the country camping next to the Potomac. I also remember coming home. We stopped and camped somewhere on the beach in New Jersey. But that's about the extent of what I recall, you know, except all of the activities that went on in the Washington Jamboree, yeah.
Now, you also went to the 1939 World's Fair in New York City.
And there again, that was with Earl Spooner. I remember, I was a little older then, so I remember a little better, but I think there were five or six boys that went again. And we camped out on Long Island near Frank Buck's, whatever it was called. They had these, you know, these wild animals and so forth. But we had nothing to do with that, just we happened to camp next to it.
Was that part of the fair?
No.
No, that was a separate attraction.
That was a separate attraction. And we just happened to be camping near there. But the fair, of course, was, you know, that was pretty exciting. And I should be remembering all the educational things, but the thing that really sticks in my mind was they had a parachute jump where they took you up, you know, they had this tower, and they took you up in the seated thing, and when they would release you, and the parachute would open, and you'd come down. I remember that. I remember this gal who was a famous swimmer. I remember her show. I can't think of her name now. Doesn't matter.
How long were you at the World's Fair?
We were probably there about 4 or 5 days.
And did Earl drive?
Yeah.
He drove?
Yeah. One of the people that went was our bugler. And I can remember riding down the road and we'd get ready to pass somebody and he'd blow charge on the bugle.
So it was an exciting trip.
Very much so, yeah. You know, when you live on a farm and live in a small rural community, that's quite an excitement.
Now, your junior year in high school, East Springfield and Springfield Center Schools united.
Right.
Do you know why that happened?
Well, it became more difficult to operate small schools, and so the joining together created a school that was larger and more efficient to operate. Before that time, before the two schools joined there, the school in East Springfield centralized, which that was a name for a type of school district back in the mid-30s. And it also told how you were financed by state money and so on and so forth. But East Springfield centralized, and that brought in Salt Springville and Hessville and students from that part of them. So you know, they all became part of a combined centralized district when Springfield Center and East Springfield joined. Yeah.
And then you attended Morrisville Ag and Tech Institute.
Yes.
Can you tell me about your 2 years there?
Yes. Well, my father had gone there in 1915, shortly after the school was founded. So I guess that probably played some part in my going there. And of course, I was interested in agriculture at the time. So I went, enrolled there, and the farm manager there was a very good friend and had been a classmate of my father. And they'd remained friends over the years. And so I lived with him the first year and worked for him in the morning before school started on the farm, hauling manure and spreading manure and all that sort of thing. And I became quite active in the school. I was active in the Christian Union and Theta Gamma fraternity, and played football and so forth. It was very educational and fun time, really, for me. The second year that I went back, it was while I had been home for the weekend and had hitchhiked back. That was how I got back and forth. Back then, everybody hitchhiked, you know. And I had hitchhiked back to the school, and a bunch of us were playing pinochle on a late Sunday afternoon, and that's the day of Pearl Harbor. So obviously that sticks in my memory. Of course, that changed the whole, everything at the school, because shortly after that, fellows started enlisting and getting drafted, and that changed. The second year, I was quarterback and captain of the football team, and we ended up the season undefeated, which was a very enjoyable time. And these fellows, there were four or five or six of them, probably maybe more than that, that had enlisted, and they played the football season and then went in the Army. I came home for Christmas vacation, and during that time, when I was home, we had Springfield Central School had an agricultural teacher named Dick Beans, who went home and near Cazenovia for Christmas vacation and was working in the woods and was killed. Well, because of everybody was going in the Army, there just weren't many teachers around to fill that spot. So the principal there in Springfield asked if I would fill out the year, which I had talked to the school in Mooresville, and they agreed that I could do it. And so I did fill out that year teaching vocational agriculture, which was a little, when I look back, was a little unusual in that I was only 19 years old, and half of my students, of course, were only a year or so younger, or maybe some of them weren't any younger. But it turned out real well, fortunately. Everything seemed to go well.
Were you having to travel back and forth between
No, I was full-time teaching it.
Okay, at that point. So you graduated from Mooresville.
Yes, they gave me full credit because I was teaching.
Oh.
They gave me full credit for the rest of that year. So I graduated along with my other, regular class. As long as I'm speaking about teaching agriculture, well, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I did go to Cornell for 1 year.
Did you get your degree from there?
No.
No.
No, I didn't. But after the next year, I think it was 1944, I was contacted by the Madison Central School because they had lost ag teacher to the Army, in the service, and they wanted to know if I would teach that year. And I agreed to do it, but I did travel back and forth from home, the farm, because I was farming with my father at that time. And, I'd milk and so forth and everything at home whenever possible and still teach school.
Did you not finish your degree at Cornell because you married Janet around that time?
Yes. So
did that influence?
I'm sure it
that?
Did.
Okay.
I'm sure it did. I at that point decided that her father and I had an agreement on the farm, and we more or less farmed together as a joint venture. But the the teaching in Madison, they offered to send me back to Cornell and pay my way, and they had a house that we could live in. So I guess they thought I did a pretty good job, but I opted not to do that. I didn't think that I wanted to be a teacher the rest of my life. And Father and I had a partnership arrangement. Yeah, so that was the end of the teaching at that point.
And around that time, your first son was born.
Yes.
Correct? How many children do you have?
Five.
And when and where were they born?
Well, they were all born in Bassett Hospital in Cooperstown. Son Peter was born 3 years after Bill, the oldest child. Then we lost a little girl about 3 years later, and a youngest son whose name Leslie was born a year after that, and then I think probably 3 or 4 years after that, Judy was born, and only a year later, Lori was born. So that's the five. Three boys and two girls.
And I read in your memoir that you made maple syrup?
Yeah.
During the 1940s, during the war?
Oh, yes. We had a sap bush on the farm, which was planted probably 40 years before by my grandfather. The farm had been in the family since 1852. But anyway, this sap bush was planted, which meant that it was a very productive, because the trees were spaced such that they had large crowns and produced a lot of sweet sap. But when I was younger, when I was on the farm, we started making maple syrup in a very limited way. My father had made it some before, but he discontinued it. But anyway, we started it up just in a small way to make enough for our own use. So even though sugar was rationed and very difficult to get during the war, that didn't create any problem for us, because we used maple syrup on our cereal and the coffee or whatever. But it was a lot of fun, because it's in the spring of the year when, starting to warm up, and it was very enjoyable, and we didn't have to work that hard.
Now, the sap bush, that just refers to the plot of land dedicated to growing the maple trees.
Right.
And how large was that? On the
It was only about 4 acres.
Okay.
But I later started making, afterwards, looking to make a little more money, we started making syrup, you know, on a much larger scale. I used to tap the Sadbush, which we only tapped a small part of it before, and then tapped a lot of roadside trees, so that I was making between 250 and 300 gallons of syrup a year, which was, and put it up in attractive smaller packages, which was sold on Route 20, you know, the gas stations and so forth. But the only problem with that, it became a lot of work. I really enjoyed making syrup, but between, you know, making syrup, doing the normal chores and work that you have to do on a farm, it got pretty hectic. Because some nights, you know, when sap is running good, you had to take care of it. So some nights I'd boil all night. And if you've read in the memoirs, one of the things that happened was the fireman put on a play that I happened to be in, and it came right during maple syrup time. And we put, and of course, here I was working 18, 20 hours a day on a lot of the days and practicing for the play, and then we put the play on, and then we went out and had a little party afterwards. I probably better let my wife tell you about the the party, but to make it a long story short, you know, I was so tired, and, you know, I just had two or three drinks and I was gone.
Did she have to take over your sap responsibilities at that point? Was that a problem because you were in the middle of working the sap?
Well, I mean, you just, you know, there's just too many things to do at once. I mean, you can only do so much. I never knew enough to say no anyway. But I did enjoy making sap, but it did become, you know, it became a lot of work.
At what point did you sell the farm?
I sold the farm in 1956. I was sort of, can't think of the words I want to use, disenchanted, I guess, is the word, with the way farming was going. It was, you know, its transition was going very fast, and I sort of felt that, you know, small farm was not going to become, you know, a large family and so forth, that would be where I wanted to be in the next 50 years. So he sold the farm. That, as it turned out, was a very good decision, but probably at that time was a pretty stupid one. I mean, here I had four kids and one on the way, and sold the farm and to start a new career. Not too smart.
And you eventually ended up working in Syracuse with Pomery and Prevesol Associates.
Right. Well, I worked for American Agriculture for a year, but then I was hired by a company by the name of Thorne Appraisal in 1957, who did reappraisals and real estate valuation work. And a fellow in Cooperstown who was their vice president knew of me and so forth and asked me if I didn't want to go to work for him. It sounded real interesting to me. And as it turned out, it was a very fortunate thing because it was work that I enjoyed, work that I loved, and work that I was good at.